You know, Sunday marks the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I. And although the U.S. wasn't as affected, perhaps, as European countries were, about 120,000 Americans, including many from Wisconsin, lost their lives in that effort. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our next guest is the author of a book that looks at the war in a unique way, I think, through the letters of Wisconsin to those soldiers who were in France. Carrie Meyer is an associate professor of economics at George Mason University. She's focused her research on the history of the rural Midwest. Carrie's books include Days on the Family Farm, and her latest is titled Letters from the Boys, Wisconsin World War I Soldiers Write Home. It's a fascinating book. I really enjoyed it. And I hope as you listen in, you'll have some questions maybe about the role Wisconsin played in World War I. We certainly played a significant role. Is your community doing anything to recognize the 100-year anniversary of the end of World War I? Love to have you as part of our discussion, so I hope you'll call in with your questions and comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Carrie Meyer is joining us by phone. Carrie, thank you for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Hi, it's really great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, I really enjoyed your book. I have you. You really got me. I started reading the book, and I just, I so enjoyed, I'm kind of a history buff anyway, but I so enjoyed the letters. But just to begin with, how does a professor at a Eastern university come to write about Wisconsin soldiers from Greene County?
Well, I grew up in Rockford, Illinois, and so that's how I came to do that. You mentioned my previous book, Days on the Family Farm, and when I wrote that, I got interested in some other issues, but I learned that Wisconsin was a much better place to try to write a book about rural issues. Because Wisconsin does a better job of marketing itself as a diverse place, and you know, Illinois can be all about Chicago and Lincoln, but for some reason not about farming.
How did I think it's an interesting story how you got to focus on Greene County? So talk about that a bit.
Well, I was. Writing my other book, I got interested in engine technology, internal combustion engines, which were used in the war for the first time in World War I. And the farm boys had a lot of skills in gasoline engines. And this is a point that is underappreciated in academia, and so that's why I wanted to do some academic work on it. But after I started reading the letters were so interesting in so many ways that I ended up not writing an academic book, but rather a book that people could enjoy.
Yeah, it's these letters are fascinating. I'm just I wish some of my students could write as well.
Yes.
Once in a while at the university here, sometimes anyway. But back up a bit, we didn't get into the war until it had been going on for quite a few years. And here in Wisconsin, there was, at least initially, before we got into the war, there was reluctance to get into it.
Yes. In fact, that was true all over the country. There was a lot of reluctance to get into the war, but especially so in Wisconsin because Wisconsin had such a high proportion of folks that were either of German birth or heritage. And in Greene County in particular, they had been very opposed to the war. So, but that all turned around when the U.S., you know, declared war and got into the war. So then Wisconsin really felt like they had something to prove in terms of proving their patriotism.
Yeah, and I think in Greene County they even had a big celebration or a big thing just to let the rest of the world know that, hey, we're all behind the war. I think
right.
You wrote about.
Yes, and that happened in a number of places, but also in Greene County. Just before the war, they had held something, you know, against the war, but just after it was declared, it was, you know, everybody was right behind it and very patriotic. Not everybody, of course. You know, there were some folks that were not, but they were really persecuted, really, in many ways.
And you you took your letters from newspapers. That was kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Probably not a lot of people knew. I mean, today anyway, they wouldn't know that.
Right.
Explain. People would write to their parents and wind up in the newspaper.
Exactly. That was something that really touched me, that you could read these letters, you know, dear mom and dad, right in the hometown newspapers. And because I was interested in the experience of farm boys from my previous research, you know, the small town newspapers, I mean, they just printed everything. And so it was such an intimate experience between, you know, the boys and the whole town, that that was something that just really intrigued me. And so I wanted to try to offer the reader that experience as well, you know, to feel like they might have been part of the town reading these letters from the boys.
Yeah, well, I came from a rural area, but the small town of Cottage Grove outside of Madison, so I know what it's like to be kind of grow up in a small town. You know, everybody knows everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So I'm sure those letters had to have been very popular among readers of the newspapers.
Exactly. They were really popular. And I really think that the letters were, there were letters like this all over the country. I think they were extremely critical to the public understanding of the war because, you know, that was the most important thing that people wanted to read in the newspaper really was the letters from the boys, and the things that the boys had to say about the war were, you know, that really hit home because they were someone that they knew.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you had three newspapers that you took the letters from, and it was I think the Brooklyn Teller, Montello Messenger, and Broadhead Independent Register.
Right. Yeah, the Broadhead, there were actually two newspapers at the time.
Oh, Broadhead News, yeah.
Yeah, the Broadhead News and the Independent Register. But in any case, yeah, I read all four of those papers in addition to a number of other papers in southern Wisconsin. But in the end, I decided to focus in on Greene County. Possibly because, you know, they had the best writers, really.
Those are really good writers. Oh, my goodness. And as you say in the beginning or early in your book, you say you didn't do a lot to those letters.
I didn't. No. No, I didn't. You know, I left out, you know, a few things that might be confusing or... I didn't rewrite, you know. I just... left out here and there. They were fabulous letters.
And I think that makes it all the more powerful, at least in my mind. I was glad that I had read your introduction before I got into the letters themselves. It just made it, maybe a more powerful read for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've had that from others, but...
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, the book is mainly the letters. I add a lot of, you know, little connective tissue here and there so that it all comes together as a story rather than independent letters. But it's really the letters themselves that make the book engaging.
Yeah, and I think, I love the fact, too, that you really start with... You know, you've got this little introduction about the war itself and Wisconsin getting into it, but then the letters follow from the time they went off to Waco, Texas, or wherever they went for training.
Right.
And all the way through till after the war was over and they were watching over the Germans.
Mm-hmm. Pushing them back across the Rhine. Yeah. Wisconsin, the 32nd Division had a long experience in the war because they were early to get into the war, and then Pershing wanted the troops that served with him to push the Germans back across the Rhine. So these boys were over there as long as anyone.
Yeah, they sure were, and they were pretty good fighters too, which
yes.
is another reason they were heavily used. We're talking today with Carrie Meyer. She's the author of the book Letters from the Boys, Wisconsin World War One Soldiers Right Home. It's just a fascinating book and a kind of a perfect time to be talking about it on this, the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One. It's this Sunday. And Carrie Meyer is going to be with us up until 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, and then we'll dig into those letters quite a bit more and talk more about that war. Stay with us. We'll be back right after the news. Over There, that song was written and played and sung during World War One, and November 11th marks the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One. And we're talking about what life was like for Wisconsin soldiers in France during the conflict and before they got there. And it's a fascinating read. Our author, I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. Our guest is author Carrie Meyer, an associate professor of economics at George Mason University. And her books include Days on the Family Farm. We're talking with her about her latest, which is titled Letters from the Boys, Wisconsin World War One Soldiers Right Home. Have you read letters from a soldiers? How did they affect you? What questions or comments might you have about World War One or about Wisconsin's role in the war? Maybe you're from Greene County and can comment on some of the relatives of the people who wrote those letters. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And email us at ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Carrie Meyer, you've divided the book into two parts, and I thought it was interesting, actually. Explain what you've got there in those two parts and why you decided to construct the book that way.
So, well, I started when I read the letters. I mean, the boys were really going off in all directions. I mean, the biggest chunk of them that I could follow well were signed up with the 32nd Division and went down to Waco, Texas to train. But others were going to New Mexico or Kansas or Oregon. So there were letters, and I needed to choose a storyline. I needed,
yep.
I needed to try to find include the best letters. So the first part of the book focuses on the letters from the boys of the 32nd Division that signed up with the National Guard and went down to Waco. The second part of the book is comprised of letters from Roger Skinner. And Skinner was an ambulance driver, like Ernest Hemingway, for example. Ernest Hemingway also developed a following as an ambulance driver. So Skinner actually was over in France by September of 1917. So this was when the boys of the 32nd were still in training camp, but already he was in France, and already he started to develop this this following of readers from Broadhead. And so so I wanted to include the letters from Roger Skinner. So that's in the second part of the book. He would write every week at least to his family, and his family, you know, religiously turned the letters over to the editor of the Broadhead papers.
It was, I'm really glad you did it that way. I mean, you've got the whole story kind of in a way from his perspective, right from the beginning, right to the end. And he's such a marvelous writer.
Yes.
He's a really good writer.
Right. Yeah, he became he was already, I think, an insurance salesman. So you wouldn't necessarily expect it, but he was a fabulous writer. He really made an effort to write letters that his family and the whole town really would enjoy.
Yeah, and all of the letters, if you look at them, I mean, they're positive and upbeat. I thought about, you know, what would I write if I were in their shoes? And for part of it, you have to watch for censorship at the time. The letters could be read and censored as to, I'm sure, you know, a specific spot you were in or something.
Yes, well, the letters, you know, they've been through a number of filters because, you know, not all of the boys wrote home, and not all of the boys, you know, not all of the parents turned the letters over to the newspaper, and then in the end, you know, sort of I chose to follow the boys that wrote the best letters.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, the letters are kind of just amazingly positive and uplifting when they're, you know, talking about sort of grim things like cooties and rats and stuff. They can exercise their sense of humor and courage about the whole thing.
And you can, at the same time, there are places where I took a pause, and there was one spot I remember that just stopped me when somebody was writing in a letter about someone coming in on a foxhole or something, and here's two German soldiers who were like 14, crying just unmercifully in their trench.
Right. Yeah. Yes. I mean, there's many, many, you know, very poignant moments as well, but they did talk quite a bit about the German soldiers and how young they were and how they were also very eager to see the war end, or how the prisoners were happy to be prisoners and not fighting.
They often talked about Germans being just deliriously happy that they were captured.
Right.
Oh. Right. Every one of our phone lines is filled, so we should take some calls from people while we're at it here. Eric in Lake Tomahawk, thank you for calling.
Well, hi. I just wanted to, you know, my grandpa was in 32nd. He was pretty cool, so. Do you hear me?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, he was born a bear. And about 1913 or 14, he changed his name to Fritz so he wouldn't sound like an immigrant.
Oh.
And, you know, but he went over there and he got wounded. And I don't know. I just thought I'd say that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the 32nd, we should comment. Thank you very much, Erica, for phoning in. And it's obviously that touched, that memory touched him a lot as he was telling us about it, Carrie.
The memory of the...
Of his father, of his grandfather. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's, you know, it's when I work on history like this, as I've both of them, I realize how every family has a fascinating history. You know, and so I think, you know, I like to encourage people to go back and take a look at their family histories, and the war memories are, you know, particularly poignant. And it's also possible to, you know, these are times when it's easy, or it's, you know, you can find information around service in the military.
Yeah, I had some relatives of my own who I never really knew, but the photos, they were farm people, farm boys from the Mazamani area, and the photos of them in their World War I uniforms, that's always stayed with me, and hearing some of the stories was really powerful in our family. Mary Jane in Pewaukee, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hello. I just wanted to mention that there's only one World War I museum in the United States, I've been told, and it's in Kansas City, and I toured it last year and didn't allow enough time. I was only there 2 hours before it closed, but I plan to return. It has a very tall Washington Monument-type monument outside, and then inside it's huge. And the things that fascinated me were, the thing that pulled us into the war was, I believe the ship that got sunk was the Lusitania, and there was a recruitment poster, like 5 by 10 feet of a drowning mother holding a child, and that plea went out to all the young men to please sign up and get involved in this war. The other thing is that's fascinating is this was the early days of aviation. They were trying to use aviation in the war.
Yeah.
Had planes with open cockpits, and the pilots would throw things out into the trenches of the enemies, like lawn dart kind of things. And then finally they carried pistols, and it was so primitive, but a great display of the aviation part. Another fascinating thing I remember was a big artillery gun. They were drawn by horses, and they get stuck in the mud, and one of them could never even be used. They got it out on the field, and it was too big and heavy. The horses couldn't even pull it. And let's see.
Well, you're talking, Mary Jane, about a number of things that in these letters, Carrie Meyer, those things are covered. The planes come to mind immediately. But also those big guns.
Yeah, it was a very interesting time for war technology, and the farm boys really had an edge because they were highly skilled in both horses and gasoline engines, and they served, you know, fixing the tanks and working on airplanes especially, you know, driving supply trucks. A lot of the Wisconsin boys that I followed, because they were from farms and had the engine experience, they were able to drive trucks instead of being in the actual trenches or going over the top to the machine guns. And so it was, you know, they were fortunate to have, you know, the engineering skills
that kept them in back, because they could fix those Fords,
right.
Those Fords that would,
yeah.
you're driving at, you know, it wasn't all peaches and cream for them either, because you're getting bombed and you're having to drive most of the time at night with the lights off on unknown roads,
right,
that are cratered with bombshell holes and so forth.
Right. So it was very difficult. And a lot of times, you know, they would be driving for, you know, 30 hours or more. Some that drove supply trucks ended up, you know, also transporting the wounded as well. But serving in the trenches and going, you know, as they said, over the top, which meant going, you know, up and out of the trenches into the machine gun fire, it was a very brutal, cruel
war.
And
the trenches, and sometimes I remember one of the letters, maybe it was one that Roger Skinner wrote about being in a trench that had about a foot of water in it, and the ambulance people crawling through the water and mud with the wounded on their back.
Yes.
To keep below the trench line and still get them out.
Right.
Absolutely amazing.
Well, right.
Mary Jane, I thank you so much for bringing this up about Kansas City, the only World War I museum. Many of the war museums, including the one in Wisconsin in Madison, I'm sure have parts of World War I and some things relating to World War I, but not devoted entirely to World War I. So, yeah, thank you so much. Jane in Richland County, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Well, hello. I'm calling in because my grandfather had a cousin in World War I, and he was reported dead and back to his family in Richland County. And being Irish Catholic, they had a wake, they had a mass, only to find out he was alive and hale and hearty.
Well, wow.
And I actually have the letter from September 2nd, 1918, where he says, the company clerk showed me the list that had my own name on the casualty list. I would like to have fallen dead. As far as I was concerned, it was a huge joke, but I can imagine how you all felt at home.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's a letter you didn't have
in
your book, Carrie.
No, I didn't have one like that. I mean, there were a number of the boys that I followed from Greene County didn't come home in the end, or there were, you know, letters written about them. I was impressed at how upbeat the letters, even from the hospitals, were, because the boys would always... they would always, you know, tell their parents that they were feeling fine, they were eager to go back to the front, that they were, you know, on the mend. And
food enters into a lot of the letters. They were all talking about how well they ate often.
Yes. That was something I was really surprised to see, although I guess, you know, in a way you shouldn't be, because they were writing to their mothers after all, who were always concerned about what their sons were, whether they were getting enough good food to eat. So they did write about the food, and they wrote about, you know, getting to know France and the French people, and they, you
and
know,
learning French and
traveling through the French countryside. And, you know, one of them said, you know, imagine me, mother and dad, writing about France on horseback, you know. So there was this part of it that was a grand adventure.
And they wrote about it in that way. Doc in Big Cedar Lake, will give you a chance. Hi, thank you for calling.
I wanted to ask the author if she had any letters from the 339th Infantry. That was the Wisconsin-Michigan unit that we sent to Archangel and Murmansk in Russia.
No, I don't think so. No, this was the letters that I followed were from the 32nd Division.
So those weren't included, Doc, unfortunately, perhaps in this particular book. How does one find out, let's say in Doc's case, if he wants to learn more about, like, the 339th Infantry? Are there online sources for...
There are. There's a lot of online sources. I would start by just Googling 339th Infantry and seeing what you come up with. I found that, you know, most everything that I, you know, wanted to look for, I could find a record of it on the internet, and you know, a group that was in touch around that unit.
Interesting. Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it. Jack in Brookfield, your turn.
Hi, Larry. I've got a copy that my dad wrote. He was in the Army in World War I, and he wrote this letter June 10th, 1918. so it's over 100 years old. And to his brother, Will, who was a railroad engineer in Antigo, Wisconsin. My dad was from Wausau at that time. And he describes how the French people looked on the soldiers, you know, kind of differently. And he was not in the infantry. He was in Company B, 108th Engineers, building barracks and bridges and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he, much of the letter, since his brother was a railroad man, and he himself worked part-time in the railroad prior to going in the Army, a lot of it is describing the French locomotives and cars and so forth.
Yeah, they, you know, I remember one of the letters talked, or maybe a couple of them, talked about the trains and taking trains here and there.
Yes, they did. The cars were marked, eight horses or 40 or 16 men or something? No.
Oh, yeah. A car would hold eight horses or 16 men?
Right. I think it was more than 16 men.
Yeah, it had to be more than 16 men.
40, maybe it was 42. I'm not remembering that quite right. But yeah, the trains were, they would also talk about the fact that the trains were quite a bit different in France than they were in the U.S. And they traveled by train. They also traveled by truck. And they, you know, they had horses pulling their military equipment as well. But there were a lot of they got moved around quite a bit by the trucks. Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Jack, thanks a lot for calling. And you were going to add something there. I'm sorry, well, I broke in on you, Carrie.
Well, I wanted to mention the role of the Model T Ford in World War One, because the Model T really performed well in the war, and it was used for ambulances in particular. But it did well in the war because it was designed for farmers and designed for mud.
Yeah.
And so when the boys wrote home about the Model T and how well it performed, it really propelled the sales of the Model T in the 1920s.
So I was going to say lots of things that World War One. You know, we got daylight savings time from World War One. We got the Ford became very prominent as a result of World War One. We've got trench coats were developed by the English, I think, in World War One, and we still call them trench coats. A lot of people do. I tell you, Carrie, this was just a fascinating book for me, and people, I assume, can just get it online.
Yes. Yeah, it's available in the usual places. It's published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And, it can be found online. I did a book signing at the Barnes & Noble on the east side of Madison, and at independent bookstores as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today, Carrie. I really appreciate it.
Great to be here. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Carrie Meyer, the author of the book Letters from the Boys, Wisconsin World War I Soldiers Write Home. I highly recommend it. Thanks for listening.